Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2627. That's 2627. Tonight we're going to have a special show. It's a Q&A answer type of thing, discussion with a survivor professional using an open mic forum. And we'll feature a survivor professional co-host who will field topics brought to the episode by you, the listener. And tonight's guest will be none other than Bill Murray, okay? He's our founder, and, God, I've known him for 11 years. And he's here tonight, and he will be discussing with us. What was that? Did you laugh or what? I heard you do something. But anyway, he will be discussing all about, you know, alcohol and abuse, and also, too, how can you use the 12-step program for both, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and also, too, for child abuse. You can do for both, okay? So this is very good. And so anyway, all right, we're going to have an interesting show. The telephone number here is 646. It's 595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I always read the mission statement when I do the show because it's important that you get a little idea of what we do here, and that's what it is, a little idea. All right, the mission is we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. That's the way I say it, two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. It is a worldwide problem. We know this. It affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I'm a biggie on prevention, okay? If we prevent a lot of things, then they don't happen, maybe. Or at least we can put a dent in the statistics, as I say, of, you know, of child abuse. I'm going to give that number out again. It's 646-595-2118. And we're going to have quite a show tonight because there's a lot that we can speak about, the 12-step based spans and so forth of alcoholism, but also, too, how it affects child abuse and how it can, you know, put the two together, the trauma, to find a way to be comfortable in life, he says. And I do believe that there's a correlation, a thing that's similar between that, because so many times those of us who have been abused, we do turn to alcohol and drugs, absolutely. So if you have any questions, you call that number, and Bill is here, I'm here, I'm an alcoholic, I haven't had a drink since 1981, and I'm proud of that, but I didn't do that on my own. My fingers swelled and my kidneys pounded, and I said, that's enough. So that's why I stopped. Okay, so we have quite a group of people here that are calling in. I'm happy about that. And so welcome, Bill. This is your show.
Well, thank you very much, Carol. I appreciate you running it tonight. You're the host, and I'm
what we call the hyphenate for the co-hosts on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We feature people who are in that category, and that simply means that they bring some kind of special issue that they do professionally to the show. In my case, I'm the least professional among them because my professional background is, as you say, in recovery, but it's not, I don't have a degree in, you don't get a degree in 12-step programs. But, you know, I've been an adamant follower of 12-step programs since nearly 40 years ago. And, you know, it has been the process that I've used to recover from any number of things. Originally, alcoholism, as you said, but it didn't take long before I realized that the same process could be applied to many other issues, which is why, even at the time, that many years ago, they'd already started things like Overeaters Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous and then Al-Anon and Narcotics Anonymous, which was brand new, and so forth. And there have been umpteen now organizations that have basically applied a 12-step-based process to the issue that they follow, like Gamblers Anonymous, for example. Well, I knew the big problem in my life was the child abuse secrets and so forth that I had kept for all those years. And I didn't have the language for it yet. I mean, I have it now, but the trauma from those child abuse issues had pretty much affected every aspect of my life. And I thought, well, if it'll work for alcoholism, and it'll work for narcotics, and it'll work for Al-Anon people and so forth, maybe it'll work for us. And sure enough, it does. And I've been applying it exclusively to my issues of trauma ever since. And I've really never had regular sessions anyway with any therapist or psychiatrist or anything like that. I've used the process, which does not include, in my case, anything that's mind-altering. So I don't take any drugs, for example. And that was part of my kind of commitment to recovery, because not only was I an alcoholic, but also a drug user. And so I was avoiding using drugs of all kinds, including the marijuana, by the way, because I was a huge marijuana user. I mean, I didn't use marijuana. I used marijuana, you know. So the end result is that I'm obviously clean and sober, but also in recovery all these years. And that's what I'd like people to perhaps ask me questions about or bring up topics about, not alcoholism, but how to apply the 12 steps to the common thing that we all have here, which is, of course, the trauma from child abuse. So that'll be the basis of the show tonight, Carol, and I appreciate your helping me run it.
No problem, no problem. Well, we certainly all on this show, you know about the effects of child abuse and what it does to us, and how many times, more often than not, as I've been here almost 11 years now, come June, and more people than not have turned to alcohol and drugs because we're trying to fill that hole that we have inside, and we're all confused and everything. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to go to the panel. And we have a nice panel here. I will give the number out one more time, one last time. It is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. If you have any, you know, questions about any of this, just give us a call. Because Bill and I certainly know enough about alcohol and drug abuse, and also, too, how it affects our lives, and two, more than that, though, with the child abuse, they seem to all, like, go together. So we have a lot of information on that, just from personal, you know, behaviors of our own. You don't have to have a degree for that, Bill. No, you don't. I mean, I have degrees,
but I don't have it.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, I want to make note. The other co-hosts who do these shows do have – some kind of official professional background. They are therapists. They are life coaches. They are law enforcement people. They are ministers. They are, you know, they have some professional life that they bring to this. Mine is not. But that's because what I do is I fill in on the fifth Tuesday or the fifth Thursday when we have one. So the other eight dates are filled by people like I just described. And on occasion, it's not every month, but when there's a month that has a fifth Tuesday, which is tonight, I fill in. The other thing I want to make sure people understand is we're not here to talk about alcoholism. That's a common thing, as you said, to many of us. And it actually helps me do tonight's show and to explain, because I'll have some people on the panel here, like yourself, who can testify because you have experience, maybe not in using it for trauma, but you have experience in, you know, what the 12 steps are, and many people do. Whether, and it may not be that their problem that they you know, live with is alcoholism. It might be that they're what's called a child of an alcoholic, ACA. And that's another 12-step program. But anyway, we don't want to talk about the 12-step program or the disease, the alcoholism. We want to talk about the application of the same 12 steps. And they are, you know, linked in tonight's description of the show. If you click on that 12-step-based link, you'll go to a website, which is ASCA12step.org. And that means Adult Survivors of Child Abuse 12step.org. And it lays out my reasoning, my, you know, approach by using the 12 steps and how they can be applied to the common problem that all of us on the panel will have tonight, which is trauma from child abuse. So we're not going to talk about alcoholism. We're going to talk about child abuse, but we are going to talk about a program that originated with Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to the panel because we have Pamela from Louisiana. She's a board member, and she, too, is she's a social worker. And, well, anyway, she's a social worker. And then we have Michelle Bless, and she's a minister, and she's from Cincinnati, Ohio. And she and I will be doing a show together on Thursday. And we have Mark, and that is Pam's husband. He's from Louisiana. And, of course, we have Bill, and then we have Peter from Canada. So, anyway, we have a nice little crew of people here. And, of course, there's myself. And, yeah, again, if you want to call in, give us a call. And, Pam, let me start from the top, and I'll work my way down, okay, Pamela? From Louisiana, do you have a question you'd like to, you know, ask him about? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got three questions, Bill. The first one is, I remember talking to you about sponsorship as far as recovery, child abuse recovery, and you were almost kind of correlating that sponsorship to almost like being a therapist, not just like being a therapist, but, you know, that's what therapists do. They support their people to stay healthy. And so sponsorshipism to me would be along the same lines, kind of support group.
Absolutely. This is one of several things that I encountered when I went to my first 12-step groups that I was later able to see very clearly is the same kind of thing that, you know, that a person might use in other paths, using other paths to recovery. And there are, I just want to say to anyone listening, many paths to recovery. And I'm by no means saying this path is special because it's the way I followed. You know, social work is extremely important. Psychiatry is extremely important. Ministry, extremely important. And there are many tools. And we'll touch on some of these. But you're right. One of the similarities is that in a 12-step program, it's generally recommended that the newcomer, the person that's new, and indeed even as they progress, pick somebody that's referred to as a sponsor. A sponsor is a person who was there before you. some sponsors have vast experience. And basically, the newcomer picks their own sponsor. So it often happens that you can be around for a while, and, you know, going to meetings and things like that, and you're listening to people share. And maybe what you do, and I think that's what I did, is you pick somebody who they say has what you want. In other words, the things that they share resonate with you, and someday you'd like to be kind of like them in their recovery. So you pick somebody, you know, the deal is that, well, if I want what they have, I might as well ask them to help me be my, by being my sponsor, and maybe I can get what they have. So sponsors are like that. Now, yes, it is a confidential relationship, completely confidential, and you have a sponsor for as long as you want that person. You're also free to change sponsors, just like you can change therapists. But this is the person who you will principally go to with questions, with your story, with advice on, for example, how to proceed with the 12 steps. So, yes, it's very common that a sponsor will reflect in what they give a newcomer the same thing that a, for example, a counselor, a traditional counselor, or a minister even. But they don't have it. There's no, nobody earns any degrees in this, and it's not a matter of that. But they do attain longevity and experience. And if a person stays sober consistently over a long period of time, it's not easy, believe me. So they know an awful lot, certainly a lot more than a newcomer. So that's the first thing. You got a second question?
Yes, sir. I have a second question, but I want to put a caveat to what you said. Mostly when people go to therapy, like for child abuse and things like that, it's because something is coming back from their past that is causing them dysfunction in their life. In other words, they get so bad off mentally that they can't function. They can't go to work. They can't, you know, take care of their family. I mean, whatever. You know, their relationships start to suffer. And so that to me is the difference. Yeah. But anyway, my second question to you is
let me interject this, though, Pam. It's also the reason that people get sober. If you didn't have problems in your life, you'd continue drinking. In fact, you have to get to a place where the pain from what's occurring in your life is so great that, you know, that you don't want any more of it. And it's kind of in a desperate place that most people who get sober arrive before they say, okay, I'll try it. And what we call surrender, they give up their way of doing things and they follow a path like a 12-step path. So it's not just because I feel like, you know, this, I don't feel so good. No, you feel as horrible as you ever want to feel the rest of your life.
Right. And the thing to that also is, and I'm strictly talking about child abuse right now, is that, okay, in my years, and now I'm 63, and I don't mind telling that because, you know, people go through decades and they see this, and they hold on to this abuse, right? And then they just wait, and they think, well, it can stay repressed forever. Well, it can't, okay? And so my thing is get help when you're young, get help when you can, because if you don't, you're going to end up having to deal with it and be forced to deal with it later in life. And I think that's very good advice. Anyway, how old were you when you started on your journey with the recovery program? How old were you?
30. So I'm 30. I'm 68 now, and so I'm in my 39th year, if you want, of recovery. Prior to that, I had tried to share my story with others, and I'd done that several times. In fact, even when it was still going on, I tried to share it, and I forgot about this. I thought of it the other day, though. I tried to share it with an older cousin who was 10 years older than me. And she was somebody I particularly admired from the perspective of she was a creative person and I was a creative person. And there were not very many of us in my family. But I told her, and of course she didn't know what I was, she knew what I was talking about, but she didn't know what to do about it. She offered me a joint. You know, I mean, that was her response.
And that's your
and,
talking about child abuse, right? You're talking about your child abuse.
Yeah, child abuse.
Yeah.
I hadn't even begun drinking. And, you know, for the next 15 years or so, I tried to share it with various people, this experience I'd had in being sexually abused and pornography. By the way, Blog Talk Radio won't let you use the word pornography in somebody's description. So there's a word in here that says he was also the
pornography.
Pornography, right.
Mm-hmm.
They won't,
I saw that.
They clipped the word. That's them. It's not our typo. It's them. But anyway, you know, I was extremely embarrassed about all the pornography. I had been kidnapped for a couple of weeks. And all of these things I tried to share with a variety of people, starting with her. She was the earliest. But later with other priests, with counselors, with a psychiatrist, with my family present, I told the story. It didn't work because I didn't have – there was nothing – there was no process offered me by the psychiatrists to recover. And all of these things, I went to rape counselors, I went to, and they threw me out. Family planning, they threw me out. Mainly because I was a boy who was talking about these issues. If I was a female and 23 or 25, they probably would have given me some counseling, I guess. I don't know, rape hotlines and stuff like that. But anyway, yeah, I tried many different times. But I'm talking about when it started to work, and I selected a process that I applied. It was not used for, you know, child abuse trauma, but I could see how it could be, and indeed, that's what I've been using all these years. So I'm in my 39th sober year, but also my 39th, I guess I'd say, years of continuous recovery.
Mm-hmm. So did you think you became an alcoholic because of your child abuse?
Oh, yeah. No question. I don't know. I might have done so anyway. You know, we don't know a lot about still what's called the allergy that brings on alcoholism. But, of course, continuous use and heavy use by a person who has a predisposition for alcoholism results in alcoholism. And I drank like a fish. I also did all those drugs. It was the era when there was a huge amount of drug use in the hippie generation and in the generation that immediately followed, leading up to and including cocaine use and so forth. So there was a lot, and there was heroin use, although I didn't shoot anything. And I did many of those drugs, at least to some degree, as a way to forget who I was. I mean, that's where it's used as a device for overcoming trauma. I mean, we always say, I always say we're as sick as our secrets, because for the most part, virtually every child abuse victim keeps the secret if they arrive in adulthood and have not gotten any help, the secret. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did too. So yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay,
more.
let's go down to Michelle Bliss. What? She's been waiting patiently too. Okay.
Well,
I'll come back to you, Pam.
Yeah.
Because
I don't want to.
We have other panelists here. Okay, hold on a second now. Okay, just put that on the back burner, and then we'll come back to you. Okay, Michelle. I'm glad that you're on the show tonight. Is there something that you'd like to ask Phil about what we're speaking about?
I kind of came. Well, first of all, good evening, everyone. Hey, Brother Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I came on after y'all was already talking, so I really don't know what the topic is. I'm just basically listening.
Mm-hmm.
But from what Pam was asking, Bill, I'll just make a statement. For me, you know, I got into drugs and alcohol because of my child abuse. And, you know, the child abuse, the rape, I mean, there ain't no other way around that. People that suffer trauma, the purpose is for us is to medicate. We don't want to feel. We don't want to think. So you're going to use whatever you can use to numb that thought and to numb that pain. And for me, it was alcohol and it was drugs. And for a long time, I'm talking about, oh, my God, 30, 40 years of using, you know, because you don't want to feel. So when I went into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was introduced to them because I was an atheist then. I didn't believe in God. You couldn't even say his name to me because I always felt as a child, and I hear when people will talk about Jesus, it's like, well, if he's this good and kind person, why is he allowing all this to happen to me? I didn't understand that. I didn't understand the concept of that. So I had not only the trauma, the hurt, the pain, the memories, the dreams, that I had hatred for a God that claimed to love me but allowed this to happen. So when I found alcohol, I found alcohol at a very young age, you know, beginning at 6, 7 years old. And then when I became a teenager to an adult, did all the other drugs. And then it got worse and worse because I went into the military. My point is, Narcotics Anonymous, when I went in there, I was broken, I was hurt, I was in pain, and they showed me how to not use drugs and not use alcohol by surviving day by day. But my thing is, and I'm going to make it short, if you don't deal with the issues that made you use in the first place, you're going to go back and use. There's no other way around it. And for Narcotics Anonymous, they have referred people to where they say, you know, this is not a place where, you know, you could talk about, you know, they'll say, we're not doctors, we're not counselors, you know, you need to get a therapist, you know. So I went to the other side of AA, which they did allow you to freely speak more about your issues versus in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But I thank God for the rooms, for my humble beginnings, like I said, for Narcotics Anonymous in AA. If they weren't around during that time, I don't know, I probably wouldn't even be here. I probably would have died in my using. Go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I completely concur with what you're saying, except for the one thing is, you know, this is one of the ways that people who have child abuse react in their adult life by using drugs and alcohol, for example. But there are so many. I don't want this to make people who don't identify with drinking to hang up tonight, because here's the thing. It doesn't matter if you drank and used or not drank and used. The 12-step process will work for you. You may have your reaction may have been to always pick the wrong partners or the wrong careers or the wrong or become a criminal or whatever. All those things that we can do as a reaction to trying to change how we feel, what you right on said. It's all about, we don't like ourselves, we don't like our lives, we want to change how we feel. So for some people, the thrill of gambling does that for them, and that's what they get addicted to. You know, for some people, it's over-sexualizing their lives, and many of us identify with that too. And, you know, by the way, lots of us mix all these things. You know, I certainly had some kind of sexual problems and so forth, too, in my life. And these are all – now, the thing is, though, no matter what your problem is, a 12-step process will get you help. And it's filled with active things that you are requested to do, suggested that you do. that are activities. They don't. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't descend on you. You have to work for it, just like you would with any therapist or any, you know, any other mm-hmm. process that you might use. They'd they'd want you to not think that just because we're talking, it's going to happen.
Well,
there's
a
whole lot of talking in Alcoholics Anonymous too, right, Michelle?
Yeah, can I say something real quick? See, I didn't, like I said, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, and by me hearing mm-hmm. you talk now, you mentioned the 12 steps. I can absolutely say that the 12 steps does work. I mean, when I did the 12 steps, even to this day, you know, it led me to be open for even therapy. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Outside therapy, but the 12 steps does work. I had implemented that in my life now for over 20-something years. So
exactly.
I just wanted to say that. I didn't know you had mentioned 12 steps. Like I said, I came in late, but thank you so much for allowing me to share, and I'll just continue to listen.
Michelle, bless.
Okay.
I love you so much. I didn't expect Michelle on tonight, but so what a treat to have you with us. Known you for many years. You're one of our specialists, our survivor professional hyphenates, and you mm-hmm. usually do the first Thursday of the month, which means 2 days from now. You're going to be, isn't it? Yeah, you're going to be the guest on Thursday night with Carol hosting, and I look forward to that always. Here's the thing. The whole show is about not drinking and not using, but about using, but about applying a 12-step process to child abuse trauma as a method of recovery. So that's what the show's about, right?
Oh, okay.
It's not about alcoholism. It's about recovering from child abuse by using 12 steps. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So, Carol, I think you're ready for Mark.
Yes, I am. And I just want to say with Michelle, I'm so delighted that she's here because she's my gal. You can't have her.
I already
she
have
and I
her.
Do her. Yeah, you bet. We do wonderful shows on Thursdays. She and I have a lot in common.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yep.
Okay, Mark, your turn from Louisiana. Go ahead.
Okay.
You have a
All
question?
All right, well, Bill. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was just wanting to know, like, for the listeners, how does one go about finding a 12-step program? Say, you know, is it in the Yellow Pages, or, you know, do you have to know somebody, or you just happen on it? How do you get there? How do you get to a place where there is a 12-step program?
Okay, it's very easy these days, and there are, honest to God, a million of them. They're all over the place, maybe more than that, because it's a global organization now. When it was started in 1935, it was two guys, and it blossomed to about 100 people. They wrote a document called that they eventually called the Big Book, because it was they didn't have any money. They had to print it on really thick paper, and it came out huge, like telephone book size. But after the first couple of printings, it was reduced in normal size, and it's now still referred to as the Big Book. But it's the name of the book. Alcoholics Anonymous is the name of the book. And the organization took its name from the book because they didn't have a name. today, you can look in the white pages. You can go online. There are organizations in every community, which people will be shocked to find meet dozens of times a week in your area with different kinds of formats. So some of them study the Big Book. Some of them study each step individually, and they go around the horn. Some are sharing meetings where newcomers can go and they can raise their hand and they're given like 3 minutes to say whatever's on their mind that day. Others are speaker meetings where there'll be somebody who's asked to come on a specific night and talk for a half an hour. The meeting's, you know, 90 minutes, so the last part of the meeting is frequently questions and answers, and or there are sharing that comes out of that person's share. So the point is that they don't promote themselves, just like we don't promote ourselves. In fact, you will find that the organization that that we all are assisting to grow NASCA is a reflection of many of the principles and processes that Alcoholics Anonymous follows. After all, I founded it, NASCA, so I just took my own experience and I created an organization because I didn't love getting sober, not at all, but I loved the way Alcoholics Anonymous was set up, and NASCA is set up exactly the same way. Not because of the 12 steps. You can come to NASCA and do your recovery in any way, as I said before, but the organization itself reflects what's called the 12 traditions, which are on our website, on the front page of our website. There's a link there. And the 12 traditions are to the organization, perhaps what the steps are to an individual. So there are 12-step groups, and that's just the AA groups. There are Narcotics Anonymous. We've already mentioned a whole bunch of them. There are groups for many different issues, but the mother organization is AA, and it is found in every community, but it's anonymous, so it doesn't advertise. However, it does list itself. It promotes itself through the internet now, which they didn't have when I was obviously there, but it's also in the white pages to answer your question specifically. Yes, absolutely. And people are freely ready to share when they're approached, but they don't go out and proselytize, right? They wait until someone comes to them, and then they're eager to help and be of service. That help, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
I can honestly say, too, Bill, with this, and then we'll go to Peter. When you are a part of AA, okay, and you do find a sponsor. I had two. I started out with a guy sponsor, a male sponsor, and that was only temporary because I found a woman sponsor. But the point is they take their role very seriously. And if they are dedicated people, they take their role very seriously. And they're there for you 24/7, just like we are right here on NASCA, okay? 24/7, that's why I'm the night owl, and there's other night owls too. So, you know, when we're dedicated like this to help people to get into recovery, we do become actually sort of like a part of their life. They lean on us. And that's okay because that's what we're here for, because at one time we needed someone to lean on. It was very important. And that sort of like became my life and also my life work, which started out actually with kids and then went into adults and also into AA. And I was certified to the Board of Health actually through Princeton with AA. You bet I was. I have my certification. But the point of it is without the help of AA, they got me to bring forth my inside story that I hadn't told anyone by the time I was 30, all right? And when I did do that, when I started to address my issues, and this is what I think Michelle had said too, you have to address your issues. You don't heal. You know, it's harder to heal. Let's put it that way. And alcohol then becomes secondary because we want to heal. And I was able, finally, to walk away from alcohol because I realized that alcohol didn't solve my problems because the next day they were still going to be there. I had to deal with me and the abuses that I went through. So we have to face our own demons, you bet. Let's go down to Peter here in Canada. Okay, Peter, how are you doing?
Let me interject a comment on your comment, as I usually do. Very quickly, Peter, and I'll come to you right away. But your description of the special relationship that exists between a sponsor and their sponsee, as we say, is right on. These people, they frequently, a sponsor, especially at the beginning, will want you to call them every day. Every day. You have to check in. They'll also want you to go to certain meetings. And you have to go, in other words, you are following the dictates of this person. It's a commitment that you make to Alcoholics Anonymous by following the sponsor's advice. You follow it. It's advice. It's suggested. There aren't, quote, rules. But the implication is that this person has what you want. If you want what they have, you're going to follow their direction. So you call them every day. You make sure you meet them at certain meetings, for example. They want to be in the same meeting you are. Maybe they want to hear you share. They want you to take an organizational service job. Maybe it's setting up the tables and chairs. Maybe it's used to be emptying the ashtrays. They don't do that anymore. Or the treasury for the group, for the individual group, or buying fruit for the morning meeting. Whatever it is, there are many little jobs, but they're important jobs that run these things. You know, making the coffee. Every meeting has coffee at it. That's why we're mostly coffee addicts too.
The point is that donuts.
Coffee and donuts. So your commitment is that you're going to follow the direction of your sponsor. If you don't like the direction of your sponsor, at some point you can change sponsors. But then you're going to be following the direction of your new sponsor. So this relationship is extremely close, becomes very important. There is definitely a leader and a follower in it, just like there would be with a counselor and his or her client, and so forth. And so and this is partially an answer to Pamela's question too. It's a special, special relationship that's very tight. I still sponsor people from years ago. I have sponsored over time many, many people. I'm only sponsoring a few right now, and actually I sponsor a couple that are in NASCA, but people don't know who. You keep that quiet.
Undercover.
Unless they want to talk about it, you don't talk about it. So anyway, sorry about that. I just wanted to get that in. So Peter, welcome from Canada and from Australia before that.
G'day, everybody. Yeah, it's Peter from Australia. Originally from Australia, but I am calling from Ontario, Canada. Great to be here tonight. I will admit that I'm not a drugs and alcohol is not quite in my forte, because I never really focused on that ever since I came on this part of the world through the AIDS Committee, as far as harm reduction is concerned. But, you know, I have been in the situation as a child and a young adult where alcohol evolved in regards with my family. So it's very frightening, very scary. And just the whole traumatic process of violence that takes place of what your parents do. So, and that not only it's, correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but not only it's hurting those around them, but isn't it hurting themselves as well or not?
Yeah, that's true. Now, tonight's show is about, it's a question and answer show, where you can bring something up that's related to the co-host's, my, you know, kind of background. And we are not here to talk about alcoholism and drug abuse. We are here to talk about the 12-step process. And if you click on the link in tonight's show, the description of tonight's show, you'll be taken to a website that I have set up years ago now that describes the possible use of a 12-step process to recover from trauma, from child abuse trauma. So that's what we're here to talk about, not alcoholism and drug abuse. We all have different reactions to how we mess up our lives, frankly. You know, we make terrible decisions and choices, and we go down paths we might not do because we're trying to hold on to the secret, mainly.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're all here for that reason, Peter.
No worries. I know that I've heard of it, you know, and my heart and congrats to you people that have been sober for many years from alcohol And you know, what I saw from my side of the family, especially from my father, and it was very violent. It was something
yep.
out of this world. I mean, and I can put one example in there is that when I was living in Sydney, I decided to go to Warwick in Queensland and spend a week with my father so that I can try and build this relationship between us. And I guess that he had a fight with my stepmother because they were both under the influence of alcohol. He threw this coffee mug. And it just went flying by me. It almost hit me. And I did say a few words to him. I said, you almost took me out with a... Well, then you're the stupid C-U-N-T for getting in the way. And I said, that's it. I'm grabbing my gear. I'm going back home to Sydney. He said, oh, there's the gate. Don't let it hit you on the ass on the way out. So a friend of mine who I worked with on the farm, he came and visit his, and he was coming out to visit. But he had his German Shepherd dog, a former MP dog. And, oh, my goodness, I have never seen such the sensitivity from what an animal can pick up if there's a hint of violence or anything that's a major distress. And when my father came out, the first thing that the dog did went between me and my father, making sure that I was going to be protected and that he was the danger. And so, you know...
No,
Peter...
I appreciate your story.
Okay, let me say something here. Bill, let me handle this, okay?
Get us back on topic here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Peter, what you're saying is very valid, okay? Because the trauma the children go through when they're growing up and they see this horrific, horrific violence, which I know you did too, okay? And it goes through the pain of all of that violence. They need something.
Yeah.
They need a way somehow to heal. And what you're describing there is quite true because animals, especially German Shepherds, it doesn't have to be just German Shepherds, though, they are very sensitive to the violence of the surroundings. They're like, that's why the police use them so often, okay, as the German Shepherds. So what you saw and what you're describing is violence. Many of us who go through the 12-step program, when it has to do with child abuse, and I think you should look that up. It's a 12-step based, the 12 steps. That can be applied, you know, to child abuse. Do you have your computer on? If you do, you'll see the 12-step based. That's what that is for child abuse. They'll put that together.
Right.
And
right.
And it, that'll help you.
Up.
Yeah, do that, please.
It's ASCA 12-step. ASCA stands for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. 1-2-STEP. ASCA 12-step.org. And it's a simple website, but it is profound. And it explains the process of using a 12-step, the 12 steps in application to recovering from child abuse. It's the same process no matter what your problem is. You could insert anything.
Yep.
And by the way, just to cap this off, Carol, I mentioned a whole bunch of other ways that you can recover, paths to recovery, and I didn't get into the tools. But, of course, one of them is animal therapy. Animals are wonderful tools for us as adult survivors to have a place to put, like, to accept first and then put our a complete love, right? And animals are all about, especially dogs and cats, the domestic animals that we keep, and for me, especially dogs. All they want to do is love you. They just want to follow your direction. They want to be with you. You know, they appreciate you. They don't carry grudges. I mean, you can raise a dog poorly and have a dog be an angry dog, but I'm talking about dogs that are raised, you know, nurtured. We nurture them, they nurture us. So anyway, animal therapy is a well-established tool that many people use. I have a recovery animal. You know, we call him a recovery animal. He's actually got papers for it, you know.
Yeah.
It allows him to go on a plane without an explanation because he's a recovery animal, you know. So,
mm-hmm. Now, that's very good, Bill. That's very good.
Yeah.
I have an attack cat. That's what I call her. She's my attack cat because she's very feral. Yeah.
People are afraid
of her.
Oh, yeah, well, they grow up reflecting their owner, Carol.
Well,
I'm kidding.
Well, then I taught my cat well. Yes, I did.
No, Carol.
There you go.
Carol has a rescue. I know Carol very well. She has a rescue animal that's feral. That was feral. But she also has had many other animals that were more loving and caring and so forth. Anyway, let's get back to the topic. Carol, maybe you have a question. And then I know Pamela has another one to get back to the top of the list.
Yes, I know she's holding on to that because I asked her to put that on the burner. My question to you actually is more of a comment. I'd like to go over, if we could, the 12 steps so that people have a better understanding. Like I have the bio in front of me and I don't want to touch the computer. But maybe we could go over the 12 steps and then the people who are listening could understand better how you're applying them to child abuse. You know them by heart.
Okay.
Okay, so why don't you do that? Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, so let me explain that the 12-step process is something that was devised, as I said earlier, by the first 100 people. They didn't have a 12-step process. They decided that they had some of it put together and they were practicing it, but they decided we better write down because it's really working. That's what they did. And so in the process of writing the big book, the 12 steps were developed and written down. The first step is what gets you in the program, basically, and it's about the admission of a lack of power. And I think we can all identify with that. For example, if you're a child abuse victim, you will probably admit, especially if you've never had any kind of therapy, that the story of your life has power over you. It controls you. You know, you will act out all kinds of things to avoid actually dealing with the story. So the first step is written. We admitted we were powerless over child abuse, and our lives had become unmanageable. And as you can see there, that all I did was substitute the word alcohol for the words child abuse or whatever would be appropriate. So we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable becomes we admitted we were powerless over child abuse and our lives had become unmanageable. The second step is the beginning of the process that gets us into recovery. So the first step is always about the problem, always. In fact, many of us go back to the first step over and over and over. Why? Because we begin to act as if we've somehow acquired power. And we don't. The fact is, though, that after a certain amount of time of becoming comfortable in our lives, we start doing old behaviors that will have us acting out the fact that we are in charge, you know, kind of, and we're not. So the second step, as I say, is the beginning of the answer to that, which is that we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Power greater than ourselves. Now, that's exactly the same as it's written in the 12 steps because there's no mention of alcohol. It's also the reason that you can apply the 12 steps to many, many other issues. Because ultimately, if our problem is a lack of power, we have to find a power that we can turn to. That's what step two is. And, of course, the words a power greater than ourselves is unique to Alcoholics Anonymous. They put it in there because some people objected to the repeated use of the word God when the book was written. And as I say, the first 100 people had a lot of input on how the book was written. It's never been changed since, by the way. It's 164 pages long, and it's never been changed. So they came up with the phrase, a power greater than ourselves, to sometimes use, instead of having to use God, 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 God all the time and turn people off. That's what it's there for. So step two, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity. And what they mean by restore us to sanity is probably understood by a lot of us. We do feel insane when we're using our old behavior. And sometimes we knock ourselves over the head over and over because I knew not to do that again, and I did it again. Maybe I continue to find partners in life that are terrible for me, and I don't know how to pick the right partner. That's an example of being insane. You know that person's not good for you, but you get in bed with them anyway, you know. All right, step three. Became willing to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Okay? So we have to discover a God, a higher power in step two. And in step three, we have to make the decision that we are going to follow that higher power, where they use the word God there. So that's where we begin the process of committing to what's going to follow. And what's going to follow are the next nine steps, the bulk of which are about changing ourselves. They're about changing in the patterns of behavior, in the thinking process, and in the past that we've had, which we have avoided dealing with at all cost until we find, recovery. So that's the first three steps, and they are kind of the introduction to the meat of the program, which begins with we took a personal inventory of ourselves, personal and moral inventory of ourselves, okay? And what that means is it's a step of writing. And there are different formats to do this, and it's similar, and, there are many therapists that admire writing as a tool, and we do too. But this is specifically writing things in a pattern that will help us later know what to do with them. So we first have to know what we're talking about. That's what step four is about. And it's frequently recommended that the first time we do step four, which again, we do these steps over and over and over, step four is often recommended to be a resentment inventory. Now, any child abuse victim has a lot of resentments, and you write them out. I wrote them chronologically because it made sense to me. I didn't write them chronologically by sitting down and writing chronologically. I wrote on scrap paper for a while, and then I put all the scrap paper out on a piece of table when I thought I'd pretty much written a lot, and I had hundreds. And then I wrote them chronologically on a piece of paper from the earliest resentment I could remember, until yesterday or today, right? Like one of the resentments was my blankety-blank sponsors making me do this step. Step five is about taking the names that are on those steps and making a list of all persons we had harmed and being willing to make amends to them all. Now, the word amends just means reparations. Sometimes those reparations are made directly. Sometimes they're made indirectly. And it's a combination of those things. You don't make amends to people, for example, where making an amend would hurt them or you or anybody else. So you don't do that. But you hold yourself in readiness in case that day should arrive. So they stay on the list. And step five, as I say, is the list. Step six and seven are the process of making the amends. We go to those people. We ask for their forgiveness in a lot of cases. We many times are sharing things that they have no idea what we're talking about because it wasn't their story we're talking about. It's our story. And sometimes they don't even realize you know, why we did what we did and so forth. And so when we go to these people, first of all, 6 and 7 are really about prayer for the it's really a prayer and praying section, because it's 8 and 9 that you make the amends. But 6 and 7, if you don't pray about going to make amends, you're probably not going to do it, even if you have the list. So we ask for a kind of an extra boost from our higher power to find the willingness. And then in 8 and 9, we actually do the work. The ninth step is the process where we make amends itself, and it's where a beautiful thing happens. We refer to it as the promises, and it's written in the big book. It's a set of things that occur, which automatically occur. It seems miraculous, about a dozen things that occur when we're about halfway through the process of making our amends. We don't even have to finish. In fact, that's the first promise. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. We'll have a new meaning and a new purpose in life. A financial insecurity will slip away. We'll suddenly realize how God has been doing for us what we've never done for ourselves, and so forth. There's 12 of them. I think there's 12 or 13 of them. That's called the promises. It's a beautiful passage, a paragraph long, and they absolutely do occur. It's miraculous. In fact, all of the 12-step work is really miraculous. Steps 10 and 11 have to do with continuing to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. So we don't let these resentments, for example, pile up. In step 10, when we recognize that we've done something wrong, we go out and we make reparations right then. So we're not building up new sets of things that have to be done in a complete inventory anymore. Step 11 is to continue to pray and meditate, because we want to stay close to our higher power. That is the reconnection where we had it in 1, 2, and 3, and we got it back in 6 and 7 when we prayed to make our reparations. And then in 11, it's a commitment to a kind of a consistent spiritual life that can occur by prayer or meditation or whatever process we belong. And by the way, this will work no matter what religion you are. It's not about religion. It's about spirituality, yes, but your spirituality can be as a Buddhist and it would work. And your spirituality can be as a nature lover and it would work. And your spirituality, of course, can be a follower of Christ and it would work. Or of Yahweh and it would work. This is not about religion, because all religions, and even a lack of religion, like atheism or agnosticism, will work. And the final step, Carol, is step 12. And step 12 is having had a spiritual experience from the result of the previous steps, we carry this message to others who are child abuse victims and practice these principles in all our affairs. So it's a service step, and it's the place that we're doing it right now. We're doing 12-step work right now by being on this show. And every night when we have someone come on the show, they may not think of it that way, but they're being of service to the listener, because the listener, especially if they're a newer person, needs to hear that it's okay to tell our stories, that there are lots of ways we can get into recovery, that we are here for them. Now, we don't call ourselves sponsors. We call ourselves contacts. We call ourselves ambassadors. We call ourselves co-hosts and all these things. But we have lists and lists of people who want to talk to the newcomer. And and it's kind of similar to to having a relationship. Eventually, we set ourselves up with at least a core group of recovery people from NASCA who we turn to over and over and over for their advice and to share with them. So, and then practice these principles in all our affairs. So that's it. Those are the 12 steps. Basically, they simply refer to child abuse or recovery from child abuse instead of anything else. But other than that, they're identical to the process that's used by any other 12-step group.
That's right. That's right. I'm so glad you know that by heart. Okay. You know, actually, the way that we apply it, you know, towards child abuse, many times, okay, we cannot wallow. We cannot wallow, like you said, like in self-pity. And so often people do wallow with self-pity, and then they can't grow. They can't grow. And that goes for child abuse as well, okay? That was
sure.
Then. This is now, okay? Not that we
right.
Forget what happened to us in the past, because that'll never go away. But we have to learn to change ourselves and how to look at ourselves in a different light. We were never, ever to blame for what happened to us. We did not ask to be born,
right.
In my case. And a lot of other people say, you too. We didn't ask for this. We didn't ask for any of these things that were so negative in our lives, which helped form our lives in a very negative way. And what we have to do is turn that negativity into positivity. So if we have a guideline that we can follow, which would be the 12 steps, not only just for alcoholism and drug abuse, like you and I, but also for our way of life. It gives us a pattern. It gives us something to follow, and we can follow that pattern, and that makes us stronger. So that's a very
yeah.
good tool, very, very good tool.
Right.
I want to go back to
actually,
Pamela up here.
When I,
oh, go ahead. I'm
just,
sorry.
Let me just
go
say,
ahead.
In the big book, it actually uses the phrase that what we have is a design for living. It's not really about stopping drinking.
Exactly.
It's about changing our lives so that we don't have to drink, yes. But the same thing occurred. That's when I realized you could use this for child abuse too, a design for living. Change how you live, and you will change your relationship with your child abuse issues, was my reasoning, and it turned out to be true. The other thing I want to mention is, you know, a lot of what I talk about, I don't mention the 12 steps a lot. I do when I'm asked. And I'm happy to do so. But the principles are the same. So the principle of being as honest as you can, of making amends as quickly as possible, these come from my experience, you know. So does my how I share. You just mentioned that one of the principles that we live by is living in today, not in yesterday, and not in tomorrow. So whenever I tell people that what I try to do is live in the moment, that's what I'm telling them. I'm sharing that same thing. And finally, you know, a lot of the process in the meetings that I described earlier is about sharing. You're talking. And of course, with your sponsor, you're talking. So it's all about getting the story out, getting pieces out, you know, pieces at a time, but eventually getting your story out so you're comfortable enough to kind of own it and say, well, yes, I did go through all these things, but I'm not going to let it completely define me. I'm going to use it as the basis for my recovery, and I'm going to let my recovery define me, not my story. So,
okay, and one thing also, too, that we learn to do as we go along is we realize the importance, okay, of getting rid of toxic people in our lives. Yes, we can go and make amends to all those people that maybe we have harmed, because we're not perfect either. And sometimes it's with conditioning of life and with the environmental conditioning. And we sort of like take away that with us, you know, as we follow along in our life ourselves. We have, and that's where you have to look at yourself, okay? And you do the, the self-exam of me. What can I change about me to make me a better person, which then would make me a happier person. But one of the things that we have to do is get rid of toxic environments, toxic people who can bring us down. And if you do that, then you start to like yourself better, too, because you start living your own life. And that's what's so important is to,
so the concept,
to live your own life.
The concept of what we call boundary setting isn't specifically brought up, but it is in one of the steps. It says, we make direct amends to such people, meaning the people who are on our list, whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, and we're one of those others. So you don't make amends when it would be more harmful to make the amends. And this would be an example of it, that you don't make amends to people who you're not ready to and perhaps never will be ready to, like your predator. You know, you don't make amends to your predator. So it's covered in that sense that we do, there are boundaries. You're not required to go in there, like I always say, like piece of raw meat into the lion's den. No, we don't want that.
That's right. That's right. Okay. That's good that we went over that, and maybe hopefully people will have a better understanding of how the 12 steps can also help with child abuse. So you sort of like gave both, and that's very good. And then remember the ASCA group, because I remember years ago seeing ASCA, and now it has progressed so in the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. So that's something to remember. Okay, let's go to Pamela from Louisiana, who is an ambassador, by the way, of Louisiana. Go ahead, Pam. That one I told you put on the back burner, bring it out.
Okay. Bill, I'm seeing a trend of people in their 20s starting to come out to tell their story, and to me that is phenomenal. You know, I didn't start telling my story till my 50s. So when these young people come out and try to reach out like you did in your life previously but couldn't get any help, what would you say to a 23-year-old that's, about coming out with their sexual abuse and stuff? I know you have the recovery program, but before you would just say, okay, go to the recovery program. I mean, you got to make some kind of rapport with them. How do you get their trust and get them to believe it's safe and okay?
You know, it's amazing how a person who has kind of a firm recovery in themselves can reach a newcomer. It's amazing. You can do it in a few sentences, and all of a sudden you're on the phone with somebody who wants to tell you their whole life story in extreme detail. And you can tell this is going to take hours. You can't do it. So you ask them to call you back. But, you know, I don't lie about, my background, of course, but I also immediately refer to the fact, which you hear me doing over and over and over, that there are many paths to recovery. We live in an era now that's completely different than it was, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So today, we are freely talking about it. Now, I don't know that that means we're recovering much better, because talking about it is not recovering. That's a beginning. But to advise somebody that it would be a good idea to find a counselor who's trauma-informed, a therapist who's trauma-trained, a minister who has experience in this area, a psychiatrist, I do promote the professions that are devoted to this. Life coaches, there are life coaches for trauma recovery. They're great. And of course, I always refer to the NASCA organization as a a treasure trove of information, of contacts of people, of resources, and so forth, that they are free to use anytime, anyway, and it's all at their discretion. Nobody will tell them they have to do this and they must do that, but we're here to encourage them, and we're here to tell them our experience with this, that, and the other thing. My sharing of what happened to me as with the psychiatrist that I referred to earlier would be different than somebody in today's world, because we have so many different people who are now indeed trauma-informed. They also have descriptions of things that need treatment, like that didn't exist back then. And they have drugs that can help you through your organization, through the following of the doctor's prescription. I'm not talking about recreational drugs. I'm talking about drugs that help with depression and with pain and with bipolarism and by Mates. And with, you know, all those kinds of things. They didn't exist back then. They've been created since then. At least, I mean, they existed, but they didn't have a descriptor. Now they do. And they're not only have a descriptor, but they also have, you know, a process. So, or a drug, for example.
Let me hone my question in, rather than make it so broad spectrum. You're in your 60s. I'm in my 60s. And say I talk to a 20-year-old. I mean, I hate telling them that I didn't get help until I was in my 50s. And they're going to be like, what, do I have to wait till 50 to get help? I mean, how do you just tell them that?
Well, you know what? I will always have the gift of getting into recovery at 30. I'll always have that. And that is a reasonable goal for a person who's in their 20s. I agree that for someone who's in their 20s and they want to know how long did it take you and you come up with my 50s, that's too far away to think about for anybody who's 25, believe me. But it's 30 might not be. Anyway, that is the point at which I got into recovery. And I always, I basically cover the fact that as early as possible is the best solution because the rest of your life is to come. And if you can improve your life at whatever point it is, doesn't matter if you're 50s, 30s, or 20s, if you can start turning the corner on having a quality of life that you didn't think you could have, if you're 23 and you do it, wow, what a gift. If you do it when you're 53, wow, what a gift. Because we
let me say something to that.
And
we have something that's very
where we're headed.
We have something, we're running out of time already. This is outrageous. I want to get this in there. We have something that's very powerful right on our website. I've dealt with 20-some-odd-year-old people. And, of course, I'm the oldest one here. That makes me the wisest. I love to say
that. The most feral.
But anyway. Anyway, okay, here. Listen here. We do have the programs on our website. We have that. And when I speak to someone in their 20s, Pamela, this is what I do, and I do this often. I say, I don't care how old you are, okay? Trauma is trauma. And what happens is what we want to do is heal. And any way that you find, like if you want to go to a therapist, fine, make sure that they understand child abuse, you know, to the oomph degree. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting your time, and you're going to be wasting their time, and you're not going to be satisfied. That's number one. Number two, what we offer on our website, and then I go over to the programs. You don't have to be in your 40s or 50s or 60s to go to those programs, or 70s or 80s or 90s. You can be in your 20s. And you go to the program, you take them simply, and I was describing this the other day, and I'll say it on air again quickly. If you go to our website, NASCA.org, NAASCA.org, the first column on the left-hand side, as you scroll down by the red lines, it's that those are our programs right there. Go to your state. It's self-explanatory, and it's alphabetical. I use New Jersey as an example with this person. So she went to New Jersey, and she said, oh, I see there's this, I see there's that, I see there's this, I see there's that. And I said, yes. And you know what? You can make friends there. Because you are not alone. We are not alone. And because there are over 60 million American adult survivors of child abuse in this country, and these are the ones that we only know of because so many don't tell. So I say, if you want to heal, you know, you get the help that you can get, whether it be through a therapist and going to the programs, which people do, or if you don't feel comfortable or you can't afford a therapist, most of these programs can be free or just a little bit of money, like what you do pass around the box. In fact, they use that, the hat, in AA when they want you to put a few bucks in. Hey, you do that in church too, okay, in some churches. I said, whatever the case might be, the more help you get and the more open you become and you'll feel comfortable. So that's what you do.
Well, let me just say that, you know, you talk about red lines. It's a drop-down menu. Mm-hmm. When you hover your mouse over it, the menu drops down in the red portion. And it's the first link that Carol's talking about, global recovery groups. We literally have every state, every province, every country in the world that we've been tracking for now, oh, wow, I don't know, maybe close to 10 years. And we consistently update these. The person that does it happens to be in London, England. She does the work, and she sends it to me, and I post it. And she goes through the whole list, and then she goes through it again, and then again, and then again. Over and over and over, we've done these lists. So they are quite accurate. And it's a list of resources by state or province that you'll be astonished how much there is. And then one of the other links is how to start. If you see there's nothing in your immediate area, we have about 6 or 7 examples of ways you can start a recovery group. We don't have a preference about which one you select. We're just giving you a little bit of a head start by listing some of them, and you can do whatever you want. So these, the resources on our website are there to be found if you want to find them. I can't tell you, Carol, how many people think we're a Facebook group. We're not. We have Facebook groups, but they don't really realize that how much is behind this, dependent on the website is really the core of it all. And, of course, we mentioned the Facebook groups on the website. But we have 30 different programs. They're all free. And none of us who created NASCA and are still doing it are paid. We're all volunteers.
Yep.
And as far as passing the hat, I'm dedicating the month of April, because my birthday just happened, to a campaign to try and raise some funds for NASCA, because we don't do any fundraising. We don't have a program for it. We might in the future, but our treasury is, in my way of thinking, dangerously low. I think we had $300-something the other day when I looked. So that's not enough for me to feel secure. So anyway, I decided that this April, which is Child Abuse Awareness Month, I'm asking our membership to raise money and then forward it to NASCA on behalf of our organization, which really does need financial support. So we're self-supporting, in other words. We get no grants, and we get no outside help. It's up to us, in effect, passing the hat to each other. And we have a need right now.
Yep, yep, we do. That's true. And then also, too, people, post information. I've already started doing that in stores. Go to our website, and even just the page, and I think that's under Prevention, Intervention, Recovery. You'll find pages that you can make, copies of. Ask permission first. Go into a store. It'll have NASCA at the top. Make sure it has NASCA at the top, because we want people to get to know our website. In fact, put it on there, NASCA.org. And it gives you the 10 things to look for with child abuse, because our children are being horribly abused now. You bet. You see, it's much worse than it was before, and for different reasons, and we don't get political on this show, or I'd go on for 2 more hours. So let me just say this to you. Now is the time, too, to bring out forth child abuse. And remember, it happens in our communities, and it happens 4 or 5 days down the 4 or 5 houses down the block. I know that we're almost out of the show here. We have a few minutes left. Go ahead, Bill. How would you end the show? Go ahead. This is your show.
I would end the show by reminding people. Oops, got a dog fight going on outside here. Can you walk in? I would end the show by reminding people that we are non-denominational. You know, we don't care what your religious background is, nor do we care what your ethnic background is, your age, as we were talking about, whether you're male or female or transgender, which we have some. In other words, everybody is eligible, because everybody gets abused. Every type of person we know from our own experience is susceptible to this thing we call child abuse, whether it's physical, sexual, emotional, or through neglect. And we cover all those bases in any combination for any person. So it doesn't matter if you're 20 or 50. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish or a Muslim. It doesn't matter if you're male or a transgendered male. It doesn't matter. this organization is here for you, and none of those things are topics that will you'll hear us discuss at great length, because they're not issues for us. Our only issue, in other words, is the discussion of prevention, intervention, and recovery, just as Carol started the show with. And that's it. And we all need that, Carol. So I am very happy to come on. I think two more months from now I'll come on again on a fifth Thursday, I think it is, that at that point. Maybe we'll talk about the traditions that night, as we talked about the steps tonight. But this is a really important message for me, and I really appreciate the opportunity. So thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill.
I think probably that a lot of people learned a lot of things tonight. And I think my clock on the computer is like 3 minutes off, so I think it's almost 9:30 now. So tomorrow night we're going to have a guest on. I don't have her name in front of me right now. And then also on Thursday, Michelle Bless and I will be together on this show. And on Friday, I'll be on again with a doctor. And so it'll be an interesting week. So everyone who's been listening on your computers, I hope this is informative to you. And stay safe, stay well, and good night, and God bless. And thank you, everyone that showed up on the panel tonight. Thank you for that. Okay.
You're welcome.
I'm going to play the music. Good night now.
Yeah.
Good night.
It was a wonderful experience for me. A terrific panel.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.